Hamilton welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How's everybody doing today?
Doing well.
We be doing good.
I am fine.
Awesome. Well, we can jump straight into the opening riff, which comes from a Quo session from April 22nd, 2007. Quo says, "It is a real challenge to take oneself seriously when the veil is so thick. Further, oneself seriously when one makes so many errors, at least self-perceived errors. And yet, beneath the thoughts and the judgments and those surface details of your personality lies a part of yourself which you share with every living being in the universe. You share the consciousness of unconditional love."
Thank you, Austin. How is that last sentence sitting with you? Does that make any sense at all? We share a consciousness of unconditional love. You and I. The listener, the speaker, sharing a consciousness. I really like that. So before I even say anything, I know I am pouring whatever humble thoughts I have into a container that holds in my heart. That's what there is. When I look around me, that's what there is. When I look at you, I see love. I'm not saying that love is all there is. I'm saying that on one level, everything is love. Not just an exercise in words. It's a simple truth. But it doesn't look that way. It seems like I'm the speaker and you're the listener. There's a difference there, isn't there? You don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know who you are. Or do I? Or do you? Quieter you get, the closer we come. I guess I better not get too quiet or I'll stop talking. But I know that no matter how difficult things are, no matter what you're facing today, no matter how short you are with money and how much you need it to pay your bills, no matter what kind of job you can't find that you really need in order to get out of the rat race of corporate life, no matter any of that, underneath it, you and I, regardless of what we're doing, regardless of the things that are facing us we be the same. We are the same. Our souls carry the same original thought. Quieter we get, the easier that is to find. Until at some wonderful place, it seems obvious that we are love, that all carry love within them, and that that love is their true essence. It makes such a difference in dealing with somebody to deal with their actual essence instead of their behavior. Not everybody is a nice guy. Not everybody does nice things. But everybody has the same essence underneath all the behavior. I have found that not only does it make a difference treating people according to their essence rather than their behavior, after a while, it rubs off on them. Give it a whirl. In so many ways, by opening your heart to love. May we all do that. Amen.
Can go straight to our questions now. And our first question comes from Lonnie via Facebook. Lonnie asks, I know the Law of One says to consider both negative and positive sides of your catalyst and then choose your path. But with the Law of Attraction thinking, you would think that while you're contemplating the negative aspect of catalyst, you are also creating more of that negative reality. So isn't ignorance bliss? Isn't it better to just be a child at play and think all is perfect than to consider how glum and negative our shadow sides can really be? I've been thinking to accept that negative side of ourselves is to let it out once in a while. Not because you necessarily want to be negative, but that you feel it is true, your true honest feelings in the moment. Understanding and acceptance would have me believe I should accept this negativity while supporting myself to be more positive in the future. Ross says you shouldn't withhold anything unless it infringes on the free will of another. So is being negative once in a while totally natural and acceptable? To give some reference to what Lonnie's talking about with the Law of Attraction, it's a very popular teaching, especially with New Age people in the New Age group from several channels, but I think most popularly from a book called The Secret. Talks about how we basically attract everything that happens to us through our thoughts, and that everything that we're thinking is creating our reality. And so there's a strong theme within that book that basically says, think positive thoughts and you'll get positive situations. Think negative thoughts and you'll get negative situations.
Well, I personally am a fan of good information. I don't see that thinking a thought or understanding how someone else might think that thought is the same thing as putting energy behind it. I think that we have the choice of not putting that energy behind. I think we always have the capability of understanding how the negativity works, and I think it's helpful to understand that. So I would be a fan not of just being ignorant, but of gathering your information and then choosing what you wish to invest your energy in, your will in, and your faith in. I think that we have the power to choose. We have the power to use our will. And if we don't have any kind of good information, I think we can be blindsided by the cleverness and the sneakiness of the dark side. So, and I'm basically talking not just about our own dark side, but other entities who may want to use the logic of the dark side. And it sounds so good. You know, you are wonderful. Don't you see how wonderful you are? And that, you know, that whole riff about believe in yourself and blah, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, look at it, it looks pretty good. And what you don't realize is that it's very possible for a negatively oriented entity to use ideas like that, honor and glory and so forth. Send people, for instance, into battle and have them die for the glory and the honor of their cause. Hang on. I need some information. That's my feeling. Guys, have at it.
I do think that there is something to the law of attraction, but I think that the way that it's taught, especially in things like The Secret and certain channels, it's not quite compatible with the way that Ra teaches it, or even really with how the brain and the mind works itself. Like I was saying, it teaches that we attract situations and people to ourselves based on our mental configurations. But I believe that that is true in a sense, and that our reality is set up to attract things to us that will be useful for our spiritual growth, and that we naturally attract things to us. And that within those things that we attract things to us, we will naturally see our mental patterns within those, because that's how reality works. It's a reflection of us. And so there's a bit of us in everything that arises around us. But I think the biggest thing overlooked in the popular teachings of the law of attraction is our unconscious ability to attract things to us. And we're mostly unconscious beings, and we have a lot going on underneath the surface that we simply can't really understand, and it's just inaccessible to us. Unless we really try, and even then, just in very small bits, we can't access the whole of our unconscious at all in third density. It would be just way too overwhelming for who we are and how we operate. And I think that that's an appropriate thing for our spiritual growth in third density, as our unconscious processes, they'll attract situations to us that will challenge us as spiritual seekers, or at least we will perceive things from our unconscious mind that will appear as challenges, and that's the basically catalyst that helps propel our spiritual growth. And the challenges that we come to may appear as negative situations or negative emotions or our shadow side. And this is what the law of attraction from certain teachings claims, that dwelling on those negative emotions and those that you are attracting these negative situations because you have negative thoughts. And that if you manage to stamp out all the negative thoughts and you block out all the negativity and you replace it all with positivity, then you will only be attracting positive things to yourself. And that might work to a certain point, but it's completely ignoring the fact that our unconscious minds are simply out of our reach and they are working to attract things to us as well. And we can stamp out as much negativity from our conscious perception as is possible, but there will still be an ocean of other thoughts that we don't have any sort of control or perception of. And these will manifest. So what happens when we encounter a negative emotion or situation and we decide to explore it is that making the choice to dive into our shadow and fully realize it, with wielding acceptance and the intent to grow, is that attracting negative situations to us. And I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think that's sort of what Lonnie is asking, is if we choose to explore the shadow side of everything that we encounter, is that attracting more negativity to us? And I think that if we choose to dive into this shadow, we can free it from our unconscious mind, and it will no longer be repressed, and it won't be swimming in this deep ocean of the unconscious anymore. And it won't be working, quote-unquote, behind the scenes to attract these situations or emotions to us again. And so there's a difference in approaching these emotions with the intent to grow and then dwelling on them. I think that diving into a negative emotion without the intent to use it and transmute it and bring acceptance to it, or sometimes we just do it out of self-pity, like we want to feel sorry for ourselves. But in a lot of cases, it's because we have natural mental processes that have been ingrained into us from ever since we were a child. We just have hardened neural pathways within our mind that will bring an automatic negative emotional response to certain situations. And so people find themselves within a negative mental state a lot, and it's really not their fault. It's something that has been placed upon them by their situation as they grow up, and they have control over how to react to it, but their brain is essentially causing that emotion itself. And so unless we explore that emotion that our brain offers us with positivity, then maybe we do in some way attract the more situations to us that will continue to evoke those emotions until we finally realize that we have a choice to choose how to use this emotion. We can use it positively instead of just dwell on it, instead of just succumb to it and be a victim to it. And I think that's what's missing from a lot of the Law of Attraction teachings, is that they come off as ostracizing negativity and encouraging people to overwhelm themselves with positivity, leading to further repressed negative emotions, which I think will ultimately lead to further negative situations. And this creates a sort of situation where someone might be high on life for a while, and they'll be like, oh yeah, the Law of Attraction really works. I've been thinking positive thoughts, and my life is just so positive. But I think I've observed it many times that ultimately it all comes crashing down when the tide of the unconscious ocean rises to destroy the happy sandcastle that they built. I personally feel like it's better to allow the Law of Attraction to do its thing without trying to control it, without trying to wield it ourselves. I do think that we can use our will to bring positivity into our lives and into the world. But as far as spiritual growth goes, I think that we will attract things to ourselves automatically that we need to grow. And if we simply hold the idea in our head that we are experiencing, that what we are experiencing was brought to help us learn, and we make a conscious effort to learn from that, we'll be presented with a wide array of exciting situations that will allow us to grow in acceptance and love and ultimately experience a type of peace and serenity in the face of what otherwise might be seen as a negative situation. And so I do think that there is a valid teaching behind the Law of Attraction, but I think the way that it's taught is not necessarily the healthiest.
I agree. And there's another reason, too. I realized after I quit talking that I really wasn't done, because of the fact that we might not, we don't start out, we tend not to start out immersed in the being of things. We tend to start out pretty much on the surface of life. You know, things are happening to us, and we're dealing with them as they happen to us and so forth. And so, you know, here we are. And the reason that in my meditation group, I always wanted to start with going around the circle and talking so that by the time we got around the circle, everybody would know everybody a little bit better than they did before and have a feeling of coming together and making one group. But also, we were starting out on the surface of things, and naturally starting to go into a more deeply spiritualized state of mind. We weren't pushing ourselves into it. It was naturally happening to us. The time we got to where we said, let's meditate, everybody was ready to meditate. We naturally brought the group together and gotten it ready to work on a higher level of vibration. And we weren't trying to push ourselves around. It's just we naturally knew that we were working towards that. And it helps. tremendously to start where people are and move naturally to vibrate in meditation together, rather than just saying, okay, let's meditate, and then expecting people to be able to go right into that zone. It's not always possible for somebody to go from here to there real quick. They need some help. And that's what a group does, is help them to learn how that feels and to enter into it with a spirit of, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do, and that's what we're doing, and isn't this great? If we expect ourselves always to be thinking happy thoughts or, you know, doing any kind of tuned work like that, we're going to disappoint ourselves all the time, because our natural reaction to a lot of things is not going to be happy thoughts. And rather than disappoint ourselves all the time, it seems like it's better to learn ways to move into that zone where you're doing spiritual work, where you can think as you wish to think, and so forth, where, you know, it gets deeper. Anybody see what I mean there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point that if we believe spirituality is supposed to just bring us happy thoughts, that when we do have unhappy thoughts, we are sort of ashamed of our ability to be spiritual.
Yeah, we really can't control what comes our way. Ra mentions the value of the spontaneous response of the moment to really get the true flavor and representation of where we are and where we can begin to use our catalyst. Don had a rule, the 180-degree rule, the Elkins rule, that was that what you think is good for you is bad for you, and what you think is bad for you is good for you, metaphysically speaking.
God bless Elkins.
So that basically, you just deal with what comes your way and do the best you can, and realize that probably a lot of it's pre-incarnatively programmed, and some of it probably has to do with your attitude and the way you shape your mind and your perceptions.
I mean, it's true, you know, if you think about it. You think, for instance, that difficult catalyst is bad for you. You know, this is hard. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, my God, what, you know, bad news this is. But don't you learn more from those times when things are really difficult? You learn from those times more than you would, say, from a time when everything was hunky-dory. I certainly do.
That's where I was going to begin my response to Lanny. He says, I know that the Law of One says to consider both negative and positive sides of your catalyst and then choose your path. And I would begin by asking anyone considering this question to ask themselves what they mean by positive and negative. When you use those terms, are you saying that pleasurable experience is positive and painful experience is negative catalyst? Or desirable experience is positive and undesirable experience is negative, or easy and challenging, on and on you can go with the dualities there. And in considering that question, I'm reminded of The Power of Now, which is a very insightful book from Eckhart Tolle. And it's arranged in a Q&A fashion, and one of the questions asked in the course of that book says, if I practice presence and the power of now, will, quote, bad things still happen? And Tolle responds ingeniously and says, how do you know what's bad? And just like Carla was getting at, oftentimes, if not all the time, that which seems difficult, even impossible, is on some level desired. That which is challenging is that which offers us the most opportunity for growth. So my thinking is that we have to be careful about our labels when we call things positive and negative. Not that those labels can't be helpful, because they can. We just have to see if we have an aversion to those we label negative, or desire to control, or desire to push away. And often that's going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And Lanny goes on to say, but with the law of attraction thinking, you would think that while you're contemplating the negative aspects of catalyst, you are also creating more of that negative reality. So isn't ignorance bliss? And Austin explicated my seed thought really, really well, and I was basically just going to say that I don't think that this law of attraction idea is very well understood or applied. But if Lanny, however, it seems that you're asking if to focus on that which seems negative is to attract more of the same into your life, I, in reply, would say the following. Firstly, all catalyst that enters the awareness needs addressed. To ignore or to shun catalyst, especially because it's perceived as undesirable or negative, is to disregard the material you've been given for your learning, is to disregard some aspect of yourself. Like Austin was saying, that's probably coming from that large ocean of unconsciousness. And then secondly, the question that comes to my mind is not, do we ignore certain categories of catalyst, but rather, how do we respond to all catalysts? And Ra gives an indication of that in session 46 when Ra says, the catalyst and all catalyst is designed to offer experience. This experience in your density may be loved and accepted, or it may be controlled. These are the two paths. When neither path is chosen, the catalyst fails in its design, and the entity proceeds until catalyst strikes it, which causes it to form a bias towards acceptance and love, or separation and control. So to love and accept catalyst, to seek balance, to welcome catalyst into the heart, to surrender, to forgive, to express faith in the rightness of all catalysts, and to offer praise and thanksgiving, these are the responses of the positive polarity to catalyst. Now, and Austin was touching on this too, there's something to be said about dwelling on and feeding and energizing seemingly negative thought patterns by indulging in worry and doubt and fear, thereby creating more worry and doubt and fear. In this case, you're not precisely processing the catalyst, as far as I understand these things, but you're creating more of it and may in consequence, therefore, attract to you, as it were, more of the same type of experience until you begin to love and accept the catalyst and use it to find your own unique balance. And then for the latter portion of Lanny's questions, I will just read a few excerpts from Ra that might help Lanny to consider his question. In session 94, question 20, Ra says, the nature of experience is such that attention shall be constantly given varieties of experience. Those that are presumed to be negative or interpreted as negative may seem in abundance. It is a great challenge to take catalyst and devise the magical positive experience. In session 90, in the same session, two questions later, Ra says, as the entity increases in experience, it shall more and more choose positive interpretations of catalyst if it is upon the service to others' path, and negative interpretations of catalyst if its experience has been along the service to self path. And finally, in session 80, question 15, Ra says, even the most unhappy of experiences, shall we say, which seem to occur in the catalyst of the adept, seen from the viewpoint of the spirit, may, with the discrimination possible in shadow, be worked with until light equaling the light of brightest noon descends upon the adept and positive or service to others illumination has occurred.
I've got a quote to throw onto there as well. In session 95, Don is asking about the experience of the mind and says that if the experience of the mind has sufficiently chosen the right-hand path as total purity is approached in choosing the right-hand path, then total imperviousness from the effect of left-hand catalyst is also approached. Is this correct? And Ra says, this is exquisitely perceptive. The seeker which has purely chosen the service to others' path shall certainly not have a variant apparent incarnational experience. There is no outward shelter in your illusion from the gusts, flurries, and blizzards of quick and cruel catalyst. And so Ra's basically saying there's no way that we're going to escape just the sort of wheel of fortune that the world offers us as far as catalyst goes. But they go on to say, however, to the pure, all that is encountered speaks of the love and the light of the one infinite creator. The cruelest blow is seen with an ambience of challenges offered and opportunities to come. Thusly, the great pitch of light is held high above such and one, so that all interpretation may be seen to be protected by light.
And there's our operable word here again, interpretation. That's, again, I think catalyst doesn't have inherent meaning per se. Catalyst doesn't come to us and say, this is what I mean. I am negative catalyst. I am positive catalyst. Now you react. Rather, we imbue catalyst with meaning in accordance to our purity and our seeking and, most of all, our polarity. And if we're moving along service to others' path, then we'll see catalyst just as Austin described Ra was saying, in the light of challenges offered. And I think that's a really empowering path to see that, to really see that no matter what you're experiencing, no matter how hard it is the whole thing is geared for your evolution, and the whole thing can be used, not run from or shun or ignored, but actually used and embraced and brought into the heart.
I've got a perfect example of that, and it's not one that's, from emergency, life or death or anything, but I was walking with a friend who should remain nameless. And we and a couple of other people were just walking along in a area that had sort of mini McMansions, as Don used to call them, big houses on little handkerchiefs of lawn stuck pretty close together, but the houses were huge. Anyway, this kid was riding a bicycle and fell off of it. It was a little kid, about 5 years old, just learning how to ride. And, oh, she cried and cried. And I dashed over there to see what I could do, check her out and make sure she was okay, ask her where her mother was, have her point at her house. You know, I had a whole set of things going on in my head where, I could help her and get her home. And meanwhile, my friend says to me, "Don't touch her." I'm looking at him, "Why?" And he says, "You could be sued." I had never thought of that in my whole life. I suppose he was right. I could have been sued if, the person coming out of the house and seeing me with the child had decided that I had done something to hurt that child. I suppose possible by some stretch of the imagination that that person could sue me for damaging his child. Unlikely, but that's not saying it couldn't happen. But it really shows you how one situation is seen by the challenges and opportunities it offers. In other words, I had the opportunity to help this kid, as opposed to how I might get hurt by it, as opposed to how a person who is totally into defending himself would not help because he did not want to get into a situation where he might be seen to be acting inappropriately. So I've never forgotten that moment where, this little child falling over and scraping his knee and crying for mommy, and really desperately unhappy, bore to me all the brightness of opportunities for help, bore to my friend all the warning signs of possible damage to self.
That sums it up pretty well, I think. Jim, did you have any more thoughts to offer?
You did, Mickey. I can see it.
Is Jim's mic on mute?
No, he's on mute. I don't think he wants to talk.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I was taking care of something else on the floor with your situation.
Oh. I could sue you for that, you know.
I like the theme that we've sort of arrived at as far as how to understand catalyst, and it makes me think of something that I was listening to this weekend. I've been doing a little bit of research on Joseph Campbell in the light of the Law of One, and Joseph Campbell was famous for discovering a theme within myths called the hero's journey, and basically applying that theme to our own lives and realizing that we're all living our own sort of personal myth. And I think that that is really similar to what we're talking about as far as when we approach a catalyst that appears negative, instead of viewing it as something that is harmful to us, we can view it as a point within our own personal myth. It's sort of a challenge that we as a hero are there to meet. And I actually was listening to a guy who was a successful therapist who basically used this theme with his own patients, as he would share with them this alternative viewpoint that instead of looking at these things as just a bad life and trying to keep them down and that there's nothing they can do about it, he shared with them the idea that they are a hero within their own myth, and these challenges are simply things that they as a hero are meant to overcome and be transformed by rather than be defeated by. And he had a lot of success with sharing that viewpoint with his patients.
Yeah, really empowering too.
So I think we got that one pretty well covered. Next question we have comes from user Folklove via Bringforth. Folklove wrote in, when you do something wrong, quote-unquote wrong, and you do hurt another self or other selves, what is the correct response? How do you best handle such a situation and learn all you can from it? What questions should you ask yourself?
I think you should start by getting the other person to apologize, telling them that they have done wrong, and stopping there, I think. That'd be pretty good.
Would really confuse people. That's not fair. He doesn't mean it. Okay. I'm not exactly sure what question you would ask yourself, but I do know that the secret to all things is the transformation from fear into love, from judgment into forgiveness. And when you do something that you perceive as wrong, the first thing, of course, would be for you to say, I'm sorry, which is what Gary was saying by saying the opposite, which is the way sarcasm works. The only problem is sometimes people don't get it. But you said, you know, no, I didn't mean that. You know, wait a minute. But I think that not only should you forgive the other person, it's really, really important that you forgive yourself, and also that you forgive the thing in itself. I think Ra was right on when he said forgive yourself, forgive the other person, forgive the whole situation for happening. It's the wheel of karma. If the person that you ask forgiveness from doesn't want to forgive you, that's on them. That's not on you. You have done what you can by asking for forgiveness, I think. And even if the person says, well, I don't forgive you, that is a burden that he has to carry. You don't have to carry that burden because you have come into a state of forgiveness. And I think the hardest thing that we ever do is to forgive ourselves. It's easy to ask forgiveness of the other person, or rather, it's easy to see that you're in the wrong and feel that you're in the wrong and feel that you should ask forgiveness. It's not so easy to ask, but it's easy to see that that's where you should go. But I don't think it's really obvious to most people that you should also forgive yourself. Yeah, you did a wrong thing. But you are, after all, not acting from essence when you do that wrong thing, or you wouldn't think it was wrong. That's a beautiful tone there, Gary. And I think that I will take that opportunity to hush and let other people in.
I think this kind of goes back to the shadow again. Because if you do something and then you look back at it and you view it as wrong, and this is especially with hurting people, you're obviously feeling, like Carla just said, that's not coming from a true, authentic part of yourself. That's coming from something else. And so Folklove asks, what can you do best to handle a situation and learn all you can from it, and what questions could you ask yourself? Well, after you go through the process that Carla was talking about and offering, apologize and ask for forgiveness and then forgive yourself, then I would go and try to figure out where that came from. Try to figure out the root of whatever action it was you did that hurt somebody. And this can be really difficult work. It is essentially what they call shadow work, and figuring out the parts of you that you don't necessarily accept, but since you don't accept them, you push them into your unconscious, and then they can sort of lash out. They get manifested beyond your control, and your shadow can hurt people through you if you don't do the work to try to understand your inner self. Like I was saying earlier, we grow up with a whole lot of negativity. Like we don't have the ability to self-reflect and realize ideas like shadow and stuff until we're teenagers, and by that time we have basically 15 years of things being imposed upon us, including a lot of negative emotions, fear and shame and doubt and hate and unacceptance, and those things can become hardwired, and they can be very difficult to approach. So do it very carefully, do it very lovingly, make sure that you have fully come into a love for yourself and that you're not trying to explore these things and you won't judge yourself for them. Make sure that when you do it, you have found enough acceptance of yourself that you can find these really dark places and realize they are part of you and still accept that they're part of you, and then you can transmute it, bring it to the surface, and it will stop hiding in the shadow. And it might take doing this consistently through meditation, trying to hold a state of acceptance and hold this negative state together, so your brain then stops repressing that and it is brought out into the open, and then it won't manifest itself randomly and you won't lash out and hurt somebody again. Who do you think, Gary?
Yeah, you and Carla really covered the bases that I was going to cover really well. Another word for another concept to consider when doing the shadow work that Austin was describing is taking responsibility for your own creation. As Austin was suggesting, examining your motives and intentions. Was that envy? Was that jealousy? Was that anger, irritation, frustration? Why was it there? What belief in my mind caused me to feel slighted or to feel envious, etc.? And sharing that same honesty with the other self, trying to explain yourself as much as possible, with apologies, with attempts to make amends, if at all possible, and again, owning the act, not seeking to blame the other person. The other person may have done something that that other person needs to address, and may have acted in a way that was unloving towards you, and obviously that needs communicated, but communicated in terms of how it made you feel versus what the other did or did not do wrong. And then, as Carla was getting at, engaging the mechanisms of forgiveness for yourself and the other person. When my fiancé and I get occasionally locked into really knee-jerk patterns of escalating mutual frustration at times, and And when you're in that mode, it's, like I said, knee-jerk. You're, it's kind of happens automatically. Like Austin said, the shadows working through you, using you. And I would add to that, feeding off of the situation, that what Tolle calls the pain body, is using the situation to enlarge and, or enhance itself. And so we have to cool down and take responsibility for our parts in the mess and apologize and restate our love and good intentions and release and forgive and try to go another round. Not another round, just try to learn from it and to improve, though, with the expectation that probably it's similar patterns going to resume again, because that's why they're called patterns. They often don't happen in isolated instances, but recur in different permutations in your life.
Right. Here's an example of how this works. And this is, talk about knee-jerk, you know. It's not like I'm Lucy and, you know, for a nickel I can give you a psychological reading. I'm no good at that. I'm just a bozo. But I was to counsel a fellow human being who was asking me, you know, what does this mean? And it really, he was having trouble with jealousy. Why am I jealous? Where does this come from? And I just, knee-jerk, I just asked him, I said, a lot of times these things come from when you were a kid and you had no way of defending yourself. And so you got beat up and you stuffed all this down because it was too painful to think about and you had to survive. So you just didn't think about it and you forgot about it. And it's buried in there. I said, when you were a kid, did one or both of your parents sometimes pay more attention, or it seemed like they paid more attention to another situation or another person than they did to you? Did you ever feel that loss of love from your parents? And the guy was like, OMG, yes, that's where it comes from. You know, and his whole pattern, you know, when he was a kid, he had a younger child was born that was sick and had to have a lot of attention. And then, too, I think the parent was getting older and getting tireder and just not being able to respond the way, you know, you want to, but you just can't because you're just flat too tired. And you need somebody to help you, you know. You're not in a position where you can be understanding. So he had that moment where you recognize for the first time that you do have buried treasure. And when you dig it up, when you find it for the first time, and you think about it, and you work with it, and you use it, you can actually lessen at least your judgment of yourself for being jealous, because you can see where it comes from. You can see why you're predisposed to feel that another person is not giving you enough love for whatever reason. So that's usually the root cause of jealousy, is that you were not given love as a young child when you really wanted to be. And as far as you were concerned, your folks just fell short. And you were hungry and you were hurting and they didn't care. And maybe that wasn't the case, but that's the way you felt. And you realize, well, I can't do anything about it, so I'm not going to think about it. And you don't. You get over it, and you behave in ways that are key to your survival as a child. You don't want to be nagging them. So that's how it works. It's as simple as that. You take what sprung out of your unconscious, road rage, for instance. We all feel it just because somebody cuts us off and thinks that it's their road. And, you know, in the process of doing that, they, you know, put your life at risk. And you get scared and you think, how dare that person scare me like that? And you get angry. Of course you get angry. But where does it come from, really? You know, when's the first time you got scared like that? When's the first time that you felt things were happening around you that were going to threaten your life? And it's almost always back in your childhood somewhere. It's just a thought.
We've got a caller on the air. We have just 8 minutes left, but I think, did we cover that question pretty well?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, as much as we can. I mean, you know, there's always things we leave out.
All right. Well, we might go over on our time, but we'll go ahead and take this caller. It's from area code 502, possibly a local caller. Caller from 502, you're now on the air. With whom are we
Hello?
Speaking?
Hi, Debbie. My name is Debbie.
Debbie, what can we
do for
you?
I want to, if you see, about my finance. I have been so many changes. Past 2 years in my life, and I just want to know, you know, I just got remarried anyway in a new business, so I'm looking for a new baby or my business growing. How you guys see anything?
We get a lot of calls for sort of psychic readings, but our show is we don't offer really psychic readings. We sort of just discuss sort of spiritual philosophy topics and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, we can't offer you any sort of sights on the future or anything.
Well, I can offer you one thing, and it's just this one thing, and that is
okay.
That, if you are wanting a child right now and you really want it, there may be a reason for you to want it. So I would enter into prayer on a daily basis and ask Spirit if that is true, to give you some insight. In other words, if there's a baby that's wanting an opportunity to come into life with your help, perhaps that child will give you a sense of itself and you could begin developing a relationship with it. If it's not real, if it's just, you know, just wanting a kid, and it's not really a sense that there is a child waiting to be born, then that won't happen. And don't
right.
It happens. But you might just set a little time aside each day and offer prayer.
Good.
As I said
before. Yeah. Thank
you. I don't know
if
it'll help or not, but good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, bye.
All right. Well, that gives us a little bit of time to maybe talk about homecoming.
Sure. Let's do that.
All right. Every year we have a symposium in our backyard here where spiritual seekers gather, and it's a grand time. We offer the opportunity for every attendee to give a presentation on anything that they care about, whether it's just sharing something that they're doing, like last year we had somebody share pictures of their garden, or possibly read poetry, play a song, or give a presentation about something more spiritual or philosophical or technical. Lots of opportunities, but ultimately it's an opportunity to meet with other seekers who share this philosophy that we all share in the Law of One, and it's a really, really awesome time. It can be pretty emotionally significant if you don't have an outlet in your life to talk about these things. The first time that I came to a homecoming, I did not have anyone in my life that I could discuss these sorts of spiritual topics with, and it was almost overwhelming for me just how free I felt being around people of a like mind. So if you'd like to know more about it, you can go to bringforth.org, and under the news section, just click on the link that says Homecoming, August 29th through the 31st, 2014, registration open. And so that's coming up in less than 2 months now. we're really excited about it. It'll be a really good time.
Yeah, it's a wonderful time. And whether you have something you want to present or whether you just want to hang and see what other people have to say and just partake of the ambiance, you know, just hang with everybody and enjoy everybody. It's a wonderful place where nobody will ever tell you you're wrong. Nobody will ever tell you I'm not interested because they are interested just because you're you. You're accepted, you're loved before you even hit the floor walking. So needless to say, you hit the floor running. And by the end of the weekend, with everybody loving everybody else and loving on everybody else, acting in loving ways, getting together, talking day and night and day and night, but just hanging together and having a good time together. The golden dome of love around this place surely must reach beyond the stratosphere. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And it's just a wonderful restart. It's a reboot of your whole biocomputer, and you leave here enlivened and awakened and full of good energy. And so I recommend it, not just because it's a good outlet if you want to give a presentation, but it's just a good way to be. And I hope that you'll partake in it. I really do. I'd love to meet you.
All right. Anything else you'd like to tell the listeners before we go out?
Just that we love you all.
Indeed.
Yes, we do. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you have questions before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
I land on an island coast, and on its floors I see a ghost. I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day, never find anyone. Planets turn and the old stars die and the young